Top of the morning to ya. It's Monday, and on this episode of Baseball Barbacast, we're going to explode a bevy of segments upon your head.
And we hope you enjoy them. Don't worry, we're going to talk about all the series that happened this weekend. And yes, we have a new home run derby format. Oh no! On this episode of Baseball Barbacast.
Hello and welcome to Baseball Barbacast, the only baseball podcast in the world who knows that Jose Iglesias' new hit song, OMG, is about his 2020 season with the Baltimore Orioles, where he slashed 373, 400, 556. I'm Jake Mintz, and that's Jordan Schusterman, and OMG is right.
OMG is right. We are, of course, going to talk about Jose Iglesias's just stunning performance after the game in front of an eager Citi Field crowd, our new greatest pop star. He has taken whatever energy that was going on in Citi Field for the Edwin Diaz trumpets. This is just 500 times cooler. And I will just say that outright. It is Monday. We have a lot of baseball to get to. Normally on these shows, we go through series by series and we do an order, you know, the mops, the sweeps, the 2-1 victories, and we kind of keep it simple. We are going to cover everything again here. We're going to break them into a bunch of different new segments, and we want you to let us know which ones you like. Just a little bit of a different way to break up the Monday show. And most excitingly, bring back some, at least one segment in particular that I'm excited to make part of our regular rotation once again. But how was your weekend, Jake? You ready to recap? I know you were biking a lot of it. I was at a wedding yesterday. I sound a little bit, I didn't quite lose my voice like you last night. Yesterday I was like, uh-oh, are we heading towards the same issue that Jake had? No, I'm doing okay. But how was your weekend?
You're fine. You simply talk less than I do, and that is going to benefit you moving forward. I'm good. I biked to Canada and had a delightful time.
Did you bike to Canada? Did you make it to Canada?
Or bike, no, you
to
don't Canada, go in. You wave. Can't go okay. in.
Got there, and you said, papers. That's Canada, and then you turned around.
Would you look at that? That's Canada. Okay. Hey, Jordan, nice. You hear this? Oh, you hear that?
What? Something's knocking on the podcast door. What is that? What am I hearing?
I believe it is a Mopportunity.
Oh.
Mopportunity knocks. There is no better way to start a Monday show than by the knocking of a Mopportunity. If a sweep is three games, my dear friends, then a mop is four. And this weekend, we had a sextet of yes. Mopportunities.
Oh, my gosh.
Whole four game sets. But unfortunately, MLB teams went 0-6. They were mopless. The floor remains a pigsty.
Yeah. Ugh. It's just, again, sometimes you sweep and you're like, we didn't even get any sweeps this week. So this was a disgusting weekend. It was a weekend where, you know, on Friday night, you're like, we will clean on Sunday. We will take care of this on Sunday. And no, literally nobody was able to. As you mentioned, six of these four-game series, we are going to start with those six. And let's start with the teams that actually had a real shot at getting this mop done. Let's go to your Baltimore Orioles. The Orioles had a chance to complete the mop on Sunday Night Baseball. They couldn't quite do it. But over these first three games, they seem to have a very, very strong vendetta to make sure that people remembered, hey, whatever that happened in October last year, pretend like it didn't. Pretend like it didn't.
In the 2023 ALDS, the Texas Rangers were ready for the moment, and the Baltimore Orioles were very obviously not ready. That was apparent in all that occurred in that very brief three-game sweep by the impending champion Texas Rangers. The Orioles now are much better than the Rangers, who have underwhelmed thoroughly to this point in the season. And the Rangers entered Camden Yards on a four-game losing streak. And the Orioles took that four-game losing streak and turned it into a seven-game losing streak, winning the first three games in Camden Yards. The true topper, the true crowning moment, was the Heston Kjerstad grand slam on Saturday night. Orioles down a run, two outs, bases loaded in the middle of the game, I believe in the fifth inning. Just one of those home runs where it doesn't look like a homer off the bat, and you don't know if it's going to get out. And the anticipation of the will it go is almost better than the no doubt energy. And that's what this was. Ball crests over the right center field wall. Orioles take the lead. In Camden Yards, 44,000 people at Camden Yards on Saturday night into a frenzy. It was truly the type of moment that for Orioles fans, I don't want to say it made the rebuild worth it, but it helps to erase the pain and the just horrid play of 2018 to 2021.
Yeah. And when it's a guy like Kerstad, right, even more short term, you're like, all right, another one. let's see what we got in this guy. Let's see if he can give a bit of a jolt. I mentioned this on Friday's show that I did with Kenny Landry, but Cedric Mullins also finally heating up, which is cool. So this Orioles lineup, while they were not able to complete it on Sunday, thanks to Wyatt Langford's cycle, the first cycle in Sunday Night Baseball history. No, we don't particularly care about cycles that much, but like they're cool. They're cool. It's like it's just a random number generator event, but it does require getting four hits in a Major League Baseball game, which I appreciate.
I would say this fun fact is two things that we don't care a whole lot about coming together and making me care about it. Like we've often talked about how we use Sunday Night Baseball. We kind of don't watch it and we use it to recharge our batteries for the week because we watch so much ball, and cycles are like fine, whatever. Cycle plus Sunday Night Baseball. Yes. Well, God damn it, I'm in.
Yes. Cycling, Jake likes. Cycles in baseball, not as much. But Wyatt Langford, again, talked about it with Kennedy on Friday. He is clearly looking more comfortable, elevating the ball, hitting it hard in the air, pull that homer he hit to complete the cycle. Again, it was like, oh, that is what it looks like. And so to see him and then to see him, you know, with the triple, like he's got real wheels too. So that was very, very fun. And then we got the other big news out of the weekend is Gunner. Anything else on Langford you wanted to hit on? Because I think, no, yeah,
I just want to talk about Orioles pitching very quickly. Craig Kimbrell has been amazing. He has like a ERA under one in June. I'm still worried about it. Like he could not allow a run the rest of the season. And I still would not trust him with the ball in October. And maybe that's unfair, but I just have the memory of the 2023 NLCS just kind of seared into my mind with the entire city of Philadelphia behind me. However, he's been great. That being said, the Orioles starting pitching really has some holes here. I mean, we saw it on Sunday night with Cole Irvin. There's Cade Povich has been good spots, kind of coming up and filling that role. But this is a team that's going to have to go get an arm at the deadline. They know that, and I think they will do it. Like you mentioned, the other big news, Gunnar Henderson announcing that he will be participating in the 2024 Home Run Derby, the night of a million dingers. He is the first confirmed contestant. He revealed this information while mic'd up on Sunday Night Baseball in a very kind of hilariously subdued way. Yeah, I'm going to go ahead and I'll be doing it. I'll be there.
Hey, we're one for one. We sort of previewed the field last week with who we thought would be asked, would want to do it. He had already said he would likely do it. And so, yeah, it's a great start. I think we're not surprised. The fact that they let Adley do it last year, I think Gunner is, I mean, he's in the midst of like a legitimately historic season right now. And
he's
so,
at six wins, I
yeah,
think. Six
I mean,
war.
He this is one of the great shortstop seasons we've seen, certainly of someone his age. So he's fantastic. He will be one of the stars of All-Star Week in Texas.
And this week, the Barbecue Bowl, Mariners-Orioles starting tomorrow, three-game
oh,
set.
Oh, boy. All right. Well, let's see. Hey, if the Orioles can keep hitting in Seattle, that will be impressive for many reasons, and they probably will. The next series I want to just touch on briefly because it was the team closest to pulling off the mop in addition to the Orioles was actually the Angels of Anaheim. We don't have to spend too much time on this one, but I just want to mention it because the Angels have played much better as of late. They weren't able quite to pull it off on Sunday, although they did have a furious comeback and almost pulled it off. The Tigers look awful. They cannot hit. Their pitching is starting to back up. I've been the lowest on the Tigers for the whole season, and it's starting to kind of crumble. I think we're going to start talking about them as serious sellers with Flaherty and Skubal. Maybe I'm wrong. We will see.
And Skubal? They're not going to sell Skubal.
What did I say? Flaherty? I did not mean to say Skubal. I meant Canna. Canna is who I meant to say.
Oh, my goodness gracious, Jordan. You just sent the entire
Yeah,
you
no,
can't
I know.
Do things like that.
You, someone, who was it? Someone asked me on some radio show recently, like, "Oh, Crochet, Scooble, are they available?" I'm like, "Scooble, geez, like, I don't think the Tigers are in that big of a rebuild." So, sorry, I apologize. I scared myself there too. Thank you for correcting me. I meant to say Flaherty and Canna, but the Angels here. The reason I'm mentioning this is while them playing better and the Rangers playing horribly, if the Angels had won, and if the Rangers had lost, the Angels would have passed the Rangers yesterday in the standings, which I did not think was ever going to be on the table at any point this season. So while they managed to avoid that, that is where the Rangers are and why they should be very, very, very concerned. So anyway, just wanted to mention that. Tigers, you got to fix your stuff or I'm going to be all the way out on what this 2024 campaign has been for you. And the Angels, Luis Renjifo, speaking of the trade deadline, someone trade for that guy. That guy's awesome. He's one of my favorite players and he will help your baseball team.
No doubt. Let's keep things in the AL Central. More opportunities, the Royals and the Gardos. Kansas City taking 3 of 4 at home against Cleveland. Let's begin with the bad here, I think, for the Guardians. Their starting pitching has just been so shaky all season long, so undermanned. Injuries have really chipped away at their depth. And they have weathered the storm to an impressive degree. I mean, they're still 7 games up in the division right now, even after losing 3 of 4. But this was kind of this was a big moment. Tristan McKenzie getting optioned down to AAA with his bobblehead day coming up this Saturday. We love Tristan, one of our favorite guys in the league. He has just not been himself all season long, and the Guardians finally rip off the Band-Aid and send him down to Columbus for a reset.
Yeah, and mostly because Gavin Williams is now healthy. Now, it's not just Tristan McKenzie hasn't been himself. I mean, we know for a fact he is not healthy. He had elbow issues last year. He basically decided to rehab it and not, you know, get surgery. He says this season he's been pitching without pain, but he's clearly not himself. Like, there is elbow. We know there is damage in his elbow. The velo was down. The strangest thing is that the velo had actually been starting to come back in the last couple outings, and yet he's still been getting crushed. And so now with Gavin Williams back, he is a better option than him right now, and McKenzie obviously sending down. I hope that if the velo is coming back, that does mean maybe he is in a better place physically, but he still has a lot to work out. So that is frustrating with Cleveland. The starting rotation is where the bottom could kind of fall out for them. The bullpen has been so good, and obviously the offense way better than we expected. That is why they're in the position they are in. But Kansas City really takes advantage this weekend.
Well, I would say, Cleveland fans, don't even worry about the rotation. Don't think too hard. Just go watch some Jonkenzie Noel highlights. Because
now in the big leagues and not in Columbus.
Now in the big leagues. For those of you who are not abreast of Jonkenzie Noel, okay? What a delight. It is. I don't want to just say, oh, he's like this other baseball player. If you liked Franmil Reyes, this is probably for you.
And if you've missed Franmil Reyes because the Guardians have not hit any home runs since Franmil Reyes left, this guy is even – I mean, this is the best. It's perfect. He's exactly what we've been begging for. It really kind of complements this lineup. Obviously, he's going to strike out a ton. But he's got a nice little run in him there. And he's gotten better. And like he's improved. He actually doesn't strike out that much, or at least he hasn't in AAA. So we will see. And just a fantastic personality. So hits a homer over the weekend. Jose Ramirez.
It's a big old boy.
Oh, my gosh.
That's a big boy.
He is a large lad. So they both homer on Saturday to get one of those wins. But then on Sunday, Seth Lugo continues one of the most remarkable pitching seasons of the year. He now has the lowest ERA in the league because Tanner Houck got crushed over the weekend. He has 11 wins. He is leading the league in innings. He is throwing 8 different pitches. I think it's one of the most ridiculous savant pages you've seen. He's throwing 3 different breaking balls. Like, I don't know how he is managing to create 3 different pitch shapes that is resulting in a slider, a slurve. Or sorry, is it 4? Because I think it's, I don't know if it's the curveball and the sweeper and the slurve, but like his savant page is nuts. It is one of the most ridiculous pitch mixes I've ever seen. And he's been amazing. It's one of the great signings of the offseason. It is probably a top 3 free agent signing of the offseason. He has been unbelievable.
Forget the kitchen sink. This is like the sink that some people have, you know, in the laundry room.
Yes.
I mean,
yes.
It is so because, big.
Or it's the double sink for our kosher households. I mean, we're all right. I mean, there's a lot being thrown in the direction of the plate. But man, he is awesome. And this is a huge series win for the Royals. I know they're obviously have cooled off, but this is a nice little statement for them. They look great.
Do you know when people in the British Empire get knighted or whatever, and their title is forever MBE member or whatever it is, OBE. I'm not abreast of this. I don't know about this. I apologize. If Seth Lugo gets to 20 games, I will forever refer to him as 20 game winner Seth Lugo, in the same way that people say, like, Sir, you know, yeah, Elton John.
Right. Whatever. He's heading for the Rick Porcello Cy Young. Like, if these other candidate who went 22-4 in 2016 and had 223 innings, 109 strikeouts, like, he is on the Rick Porcello path. Now, again, it's going to take these other candidates to kind of fall off. But, wow, what a season for Seth Lugo. Anything else on the Royals before we move on?
Yeah, Vinny Pasquantino is heating up. That is good to see. And then Bobby Witt hit a triple down the left field line. Now, that might not sound particularly unique, but I want everyone listening to pause for a second and think about the logistics that are necessary to hit a triple down the left field line. Most triples are either down the right field line or in the right center gap or in stadiums that are a little bit wonky. I would say Kansas City is very amenable to the triple because of it. You know, it has the most outfield space of any stadium in baseball. But hitting any triple down the left field line is a remarkable feat, just because the lack of distance that the outfielder needs to throw the ball into third base. Bobby Witt is a freak. He's so fast. He is a delight. He is one of the best players in baseball, and he will not start the All-Star game because Gunnar Henderson is going to win this fan vote, I think.
Can we loan him to the National League?
That's funny. Speaking of All-Star voting, the Philadelphia Phillies, whose fans went full 2015 Royals, putting seemingly every single one of their players into the All-Star voting finals. They split over the weekend with the Marlins, in large part because Kyle Schwarber and Bryce Harper hit the IL at the same time. They both had issues on Thursday night, hit the IL Friday morning. Harper has a left hamstring strain. Schwarber has a left groin strain. Both of them are expected to be back before the All-Star break, if not right after it. The concern level in Philadelphia is not too high, but it did create a situation where on Sunday, their lineup featured David Dahl, Whit Merrifield, Rafael Marchand, and Cody Clemens, which, again, is not usually... No, the best team in baseball. They have the best record in baseball, okay? And that's their bottom four. That's fine, and I think that those players are a little bit better than we think, all four of them, and compared to the bottom falling out of their depth in previous seasons, I think it is certainly a little bit better. Their pitching is regressing just a tad. Ranger Suarez got knocked around on Sunday by the Marlins, even though the Phillies won. But yeah, I mean, you split two. They're just kind of weathering the storm for now until they get these guys back.
Yeah, which is fine. And that's the point I keep making, and maybe accepting this mediocrity across this league is not good, but everyone's bottom four sucks. So, you know, if Cody Clemens, yeah, we got bottom of this podcast lineup is doing its job. All right, stepping up. It's like, okay, yeah, oh, wow, that looks terrible. Yes, yeah, so we'll look at everyone else. I mean, it's fine. They're going to be okay. And then when they get healthy, they'll be all right. Especially when you have, like, Trey Turner's heating back up. Bohm looks good. Cassiano's four-hit game on Sunday. So they'll be okay. Not obviously worried about the Phillies. There was a moment there, where, especially with Harper, when he was like, I've never felt anything like this before. And everyone's like, oh, no, this is going to be so serious. And then it seems like he is fine.
In some ways it's a good thing because you don't want the recurring problems that a player has to creep
true.
Back up.
That's true.
You know, he's had so many issues. Can I ask you a question?
Yeah, please.
Bryce Harper beat Shohei Ohtani in the fan vote for the most votes for the All-Star game. Do you find that notable or interesting or odd at all?
I don't know. The fan voting stuff, part of me just wants to completely ignore it, and part of me wants to, like, really dig in and try and understand how these things happen. And I really just feel like it is a reflection of the... I mean, it's weird. I would not assume anyone would beat Ohtani in any sort of voting under any circumstances, especially assuming people can vote in Japan, which I guess I don't know why they couldn't. So I think that is interesting. I do think that this isn't like a anti-Dodgers thing, but like I do think that it is also just a reflection of how good the fans are feeling, right? Like that's just how fan voting works. It's how good is this fan base feeling? How excited are we about our team right now? And not that the Dodgers have been bad, but like it's not like if they were had, you know, an 800 winning percentage and Ohtani had 40 home runs instead of 30, I think it would be clearly him. But like I think it always is just a reflection of how good the fans are feeling. So that's kind of where I feel like it is. And it's
the city of Philadelphia. The city of Philadelphia 1, Japan 0 is what I'm hearing you say. Also, Jordan, what you said about, you know, how do we feel about our team? And does that make me want to vote? I would actually say that is all voting, not just all-star voting.
You don't say. Let's move on. Also, Jazz Chisholm stealing the Philly Fanatics ATV is great just because while we see hijinks, if you haven't seen this video of Jazz just riding the ATV into left field before the game, it's great because Jazz at this point is like, what are you going to tell me to do? Like, we're one of the worst teams in baseball. I'm Jazz Chisholm. Like, no one's going to be like, hey, Jazz, don't do that. Like, yeah. Yep. That's great.
What are you going to do? Send me to the bottom of the NL East? Like,
what are you going to do?
Jazz's DGAF meter is just off the charts.
It's not going to put you in a better position.
Yeah. Yeah.
Anyway. Go Jazz, go. I would love to see. I'd be fascinated to see if someone trades for him because we know they're trying to deal him. We know for a fact they would trade him. Peter Bennix would trade him so fast if he could get a top 100 prospect. And I would be so curious to see who would take that leap. All right, two more opportunities. Cardinals and Reds split. The two main people I want to focus on here besides the results are Ryan Helsley for the Cardinals and Jonathan India for the Reds. Jonathan India was off to a horrible start. His future in Cincinnati was very much in doubt because of all the infielders they had coming up. Then Marte gets suspended and Matt McClain gets hurt, and they're like, all right, fine, Jonathan India, you stick around and do your best. He was very bad, but they still need him in the lineup. He has been unbelievable, one of the best players in baseball so far in June. He has a double in 8 straight games. The record for doubles and consecutive games is actually 9 by Bo Bichette in 2019. And I just think that's kind of amazing that the record for most consecutive games with a homer is 8. And the record for most consecutive games with a double is only 9. I found that kind of shocking. And I guess Jonathan India, when the Reds play, I don't know who the Reds are playing this week, but that is a streak that is intact. So the Reds are in New York. All right. So the Reds are at Yankee Stadium this week. So if you go see, maybe you will see history from Jonathan India this week. And then Ryan Helsley is also threatening a major league record very quietly. Ryan Helsley has saves in 30 of the Cardinals' first 43 wins. That is 70% of the Cardinals' wins. And going through the saves, all-time saves, single-season leaders last night, from what I can tell, this is, I believe, would be a major league record. Now, long way to go, obviously. But, I mean, you know, Edwin Diaz in 2018, when he had 57 saves for the Mariners, that was 64% of games. Eric Gagne, 2003, 65% of the Dodgers' wins, percentage of wins being saves. Ryan Helsley at 70%. The only other number I found at 70%, Jake, was Hunter Harvey's dad, Brian Harvey. I don't know if you've ever looked at Brian Harvey's career, but Brian Harvey saved 45 games for the 64-win 1993 Marlins in their first year of existence. So that was a weirdly good closer on a terrible team. Ryan Helsley, an amazing closer on a possibly decent team, and the rate at which he's racking up saves is absolutely tremendous. And I can guarantee you, when he is invited to the All-Star game later this month, he will not be pitching. They will say, Ryan, we need every bullet you need. Take a seat, enjoy the festivities, and please do not leave the bullpen.
Should the Cardinals lose every game the rest of the year to ensure Ryan Helsley gets this record?
I think so. I think after the season that they had last year, I think they can afford to kind of mess around and just chase this very obscure record. One warm opportunity, the Yankees and the Blue Jays. This was an interesting one. I, Yankees fans right now obviously aren't feeling awesome. They are, you know, they're having some injuries. Their pitching is certainly starting to regress a little bit. We had a little bit of spice. Marcus Stroman screaming at his infield. Aaron Judge says, yo, we don't do that around here. Marcus Stroman says, you're right. What am I going to tell you? You're Aaron Judge. Gleyber Torres ends up homering in that game, and they're all good. But yeah, Blue Jays also showing minor signs of life. Vlad has been unbelievable the last month. He deserves way more credit than he gets. But yeah, anything else you got on this one?
The Stroman Gleyber stuff was fascinating. Basically, for those of you who are not locked in on the Yankees every 2 seconds, here's the timeline. Gleyber does a bunch of, frankly, lazy stuff during the week. And that, coupled with just criminal underperformance this year, leads to him getting benched. And he sits out a couple games, comes back on Friday night. And then there's a double play turn where he doesn't really throw it full gas.
Yeah,
he kind of does. Here's the thing, right? Gleyber Torres, this is like in the Robinson Cano type of vein, where he's trying hard, but it doesn't come through. Like, he's just a low energy, casual player. And like, that's not a horrible thing if you produce. This double play, he is not the type of guy who makes it look like he's trying really hard all the time, right?
No, I know that, but I would just say,
going on for this specific double play turn, it was not like an abhorrent attempt. This was
on the pantheon of Gleyber Torres defensive disasters. This is very low down. This was not that big of a deal.
And that's why I think it's interesting, because Marcus Stroman erupts and is kind of like, you know, throw the damn ball, bro, show a little intensity. And there's no way that feeling is based solely on that particular play. So this tells me multiple things, right? This tells me that the Yankees, to an extent, or Stroman, to an extent, are somewhat frustrated with Gleyber's lack of intensity, which we know because they benched him for 2 days. I think that when this type of situation happens between players, it's not a huge deal, actually, because family members fight all the time and teammates fight all the time. And it's important to hold people accountable. And I think, you know, what we saw from Judge to Stroman to Gleyber is how it's supposed to work, kind of, right? Like, I don't see a huge issue with it, but I do think it is particularly interesting. Juan Soto missed the game on Saturday with a swollen hand. Everyone freaked out for 25 minutes, and then he played on Sunday. It was fine. Aaron Judge has 31 home runs and 82 RBI. If he tries to break his own record, are we going to have to do this again? You think?
I mean, dude, my problem is like, we are heading towards the same discourse of when he was chasing the record, where the degree to which people are going to stop pitching to him is going to be so understandable. But like, Yankees fans are going to start being like, not only, oh, you're scared, or like, you're disrespecting the game by not pitching him. And it's like, oh my God. Like, at some point, you have to try and beat the Yankees. And the way to do that is probably not throwing Aaron Judge anything in the strike zone. I don't want that to happen because I enjoy Aaron Judge hitting home runs. But I'm just saying, it feels like we are going to head in that direction at some point soon. I'm glad he's getting these in now, because I think we're going to have that issue at some point. All right. Before we take a break, we have one. It's time to bring back one of our favorite segments. I don't know why we haven't done this more often, but now we are going to make this part of our Monday routine. And that is the return of Sorry for Your Mentions. While the platform, formerly known as Twitter, we still call it Twitter, has changed much over the years, there is one element that we will never, ever, ever tire of, and that is a team posting a final score graphic amidst a tough stretch, and fans and haters and bots alike just rush into the replies and the mentions and go absolutely ham. And there was no team that suffered this fate, no team account that suffered this fate. And this is why we call this Sorry for Your Mentions. This is directed at those social media managers around this great league who have to tweet out the final score because it's part of the
job.
We
see you. We hear you.
We stand with you. We understand you. However, while you probably post this final score and log off for the day, we dive in because boy are these hilarious. The Cubs lost 2 of 3 in Milwaukee over the weekend. The Brewers with a Jackson Churio grand slam on Friday, a Bryce Terang grand slam on Sunday. The Cubs eking out a close one on Saturday, but the Brewers are continuing to kick Craig Counsell's butt. The Cubs are in last place. the Cubs fans are losing hope. I saw many references to that being the end of the season. While that may be premature, let's zoom in on the final score tweet from the Cubs on Sunday. Final, colon, Brewers 7, Cubs 1. And Jake, let's go through some of our favorite replies.
This is from Wes. Quote, I think I'm done for the season. Despite being only a few games out of the wild card, there are five games right now. We are terrible. No hits since the first inning is embarrassing. We absolutely suck. This is not the team I thought we'd be going into the season. I'm good till next year.
All right, this next one.
Wes, yeah. I think Wes will watch another game.
Wes will be back. I'm not worried about that.
Yeah.
Next one. This is from at Trekker Forever. Quote, somebody needs to scream, and it won't be Craig. Yeah, I know he doesn't hit or pitch, but he's the leader, the manager. Time to say something besides we need to get more runs.
Nice. Yeah. This is from Honest Cubs Fan. Please at least lose by throwing up a respectable amount of runs.
Would that make you feel better, Honest Cubs Fan? I'm not convinced that it actually would. This next one. It comes from JGB. I'm not overly surprised. Maybe a little bit, but I predicted they'd finish third or fourth, depending on injuries. Not worse in the division. Can't remember any Cubs team that's less fun to follow than this one. Less talented ones, but none that have played so poorly in so many ways. Man, that's... Whew. Yeah, I love this next one from Lou. But do you want to read another one?
This is from C Clusters. This is not on Council. Cubs would be around the White Sox record if Ross was still here. Council pulled all the strings in April for the fast start, covered up how bad the team really is. Now Council has no more strings to pull, and the players are showing their colors. What an unbelievable way to think about this, that the Cubs would be like 15 games worse if David Ross was still here. Like, you got rid of the guy. I understand you didn't like him, but like, he's gone. It's okay. Let David Ross, you know, chill on the beach.
Yeah, he's chilling. Last one for me here. Lou says, I stopped caring about the Cubs just like the players on the team have, and my life has been much better.
Wow.
Again, I'm sure these people will watch this week, but it is funny when they let at Cubs know how they're feeling.
I have a couple more. Trade Bellinger for more young arms. Also, who is going to reimburse me for my MLB TV subscription? This team is brutal. The effort isn't there. Do your job. Hashtag Cubs. Got to hashtag the Cubs. One more is from Keith. Keith says, I still believe. This just makes the story even better when we look back on the triumphant 2024 campaign. Keith, you're sick.
All right? Love that. There we go. We need to balance out the negativity. I respect the enthusiasm. Do you see... There was a response to Keith from John regarding Keith's enthusiasm that John said, snap the picture in your backyard if Bigfoot is riding a unicorn. Better chance of that happening. Oh, man. Cubs fans are going through it. Cubs fans, let us know. BaseballBarbercast@gmail.com. How are you feeling? All right, Jake, let's take a break. And when we return, we'll run through the rest of the series with a few new segments.
Welcome back to Baseball Barbercast. Jake Mintz, Jordan Schuster, and we have more baseball to talk about. That is the show. No freaking duh. New segment. Let's introduce it. Very simple concept. It's called nuclear overreaction, because the only thing worse than an overreaction is a nuclear overreaction.
Let's get wild, and let's talk about what happened in Atlanta this weekend, because the Braves took 2 of 3 over the Buccos, and Paul Skenes, unfortunately, went full deja vu on Saturday afternoon, allowing a leadoff home run just like he did to Tampa Bay, this time against Jared Kelnick, and then just mowing down the opponent over the next six innings. And once again, because the Pirates cannot score, he was left with a no decision. While Paul Skeens has yet to lose, he has yet to have a loss next to his name, he is not racking up nearly as many dubs as he probably deserves, and that is because the Pirates cannot score. I know they scored more on Sunday. Good for them. Brian Reynolds had a 25-game hitting streak, but Jake, with this all in mind, what is your nuclear overreaction?
My nuclear overreaction is that Paul Skeens should hit. Now, I don't know if I really believe this, but I'm going to say it anyway.
Commit to the bit. Come on.
I will. The Pirates offense is buns and a half. They have an 85 WRC plus this season. It's not getting better. That number is 86 over the past month. That is 14% below league average. They're 28th in the league in slug. Their farm system is not exactly stocked with offensive talent coming up the chain.
Plenty more pitchers. You have plenty more pitchers.
Tons
coming.
Of arms. Tons of arms. The Pirates could be good even if Paul Skeens doesn't pitch, right? There are, he's going to help. There are hurlers on their way. What is not on their way are hitters. And Mr. Paul Skeens was a spectacular college hitter for his first two seasons at the Air Force Academy. He has legitimate plus-plus power. He did not hit as a junior at LSU, but there is magic in this man. If we are willing to accept that Shohei Ohtani is a freak of nature who can do both things at the same time, then we must believe the same thing about Paul Skeens. Do you really think that Paul Skeens, if given the opportunity, I don't think he would be an all-star hitter. I don't think anybody would be. Ohtani's a singular thing. But he could be better than some of the things that the Pirates have going on, right?
Can we get some starts against lefties? Let's make it happen.
Yeah, get him some swings, man. Like, let the kid hit. If Paul Skeens had been born and raised in Japan, he would be doing both. That is a fact of nature, okay? And I'm not trying to say that everyone should be Shohei Ohtani. Ohtani is his own thing, I understand. But the Pirates should let Paul Skeens hit. Watching this lineup just do nothing in their offensive innings while Paul Skeens is out there in the defensive innings shoving it down everyone's throat, just give him the opportunity to fail. All right. Yep. At least he would go down better if he finished every game with 3 strikeouts, right? He would feel better about his team losing.
Sure. Listen, Rowdy has been awesome this month. He has heated up. Ben Cherington's patience has been rewarded. Ryan Reynolds, great. O'Neill Cruz, sometimes good. But they need all the help they can get. And you mentioned, at Air Force, he led the team in home runs during LSU's fall ball. And yet he got too good at pitching for them to let him keep hitting.
Yeah. So, if Paul Skeens was 10% worse at pitching.
That's the thing. He got too good. It's not even just where he's from. He just got too good at pitching. What an idiot.
Now, the obvious problem here is, if he gets hurt. Pirates, give Paul Skeens a $200 million extension right now and say you're going to hit two if you want. Okay? Solved. Problem Amen. Freaking solved.
Amen, brother. Yes, but either way, he's still, appointment viewing on the mound. I would just like to sneak in a few pinch hit appearances here and there. All right, Jake, our next segment. We're going to call this one a first time for everything. One of the reasons we love covering baseball is that something happens, as cliche as it is. Something happens that you'll never, ever, ever, you've never, ever seen before. It happens all the time. Maybe not every single game you attend, but look around the league, and basically every day there's something happening you've never seen before. With that in mind, Jake, what is our inaugural nominee for our first time for everything segment?
Jose Iglesias went full Troy Bolton, High School Musical, okay? The Mets win Friday night, I believe 7-2 over the Astros. And after the game, Jose Iglesias provided a live rendition of his new hit song, OMG. Now, if you're confused by that sentence, totally fair. Jose Iglesias, veteran infielder, incredible glove, good bat to ball skills, and absolutely zero power to speak of, is also now a Latin pop artist. And the Mets heard an early release of his song, OMG, and they absolutely adored it. And they encouraged him to do a performance, and he did a performance on the field after the game at Citi Field in his full uniform under the concert lights, and it was just immaculate vibes. Like, this is something I have never seen before in my baseball watching life. We have had Stephen Brault sing the national anthem before the game.
Yeah, but
this is altogether different.
Oh, way, way more wild. Earlier in the week, he had performed it at some sort of Mets charity event, I believe. And his teammates were there, and there was a great video of them all. And it was like, oh, look how good the Mets vibes are. But to incorporate, to bring the entire stadium in it after beating the Astros is just so, so, so great. And just such a flex, right? Because, like, what I'm thinking about in that moment is not just how good of a time the, you know, the Mets are having on the field. But, like, if you're the Astros and you're in the clubhouse after losing to the Mets and you're trying to get your season back on track, I know they've played better as late, and you hear Jose Iglesias just going ham out there, you know, this is post-game concert for the team that just whooped your ass, is so funny. Like, that is just... Now, the Astros promptly responded over the next couple games, which was no surprise. I think that maybe motivated them a little bit. But yeah, that was the part I was thinking of, just like how annoyed I would be if I was Houston. But credit to Jose Iglesias. This
right.
is amazing.
Like, it's not Pete Alonso or Lindor singing. You know, it's like your dude who's performing wouldn't start or play on our team, you know?
Yep. That is definitely a first time for everything, but maybe we will see it again. Maybe this will become a routine as the Mets remain shockingly relevant, I guess, here at the midway point.
The only thing that could stop the Mets' immaculate grimace energy was the cartoon baseball villain that is the Houston Astros. Now, I know that these Astros are just... We are now 7 years removed from the can-banging malfeasance. However, you know, Jose Altuve is still around and Alex Bregman is still around. And until those guys are gone, fans won't understand the difference. And that makes him a great cartoon villain. And it is only they who could beat the Mets and end June for the Mets. They're 16-8, finishing on L2. How real are the Mets? I don't know. Let's talk about it on Wednesday. All I care about is that Jose Iglesias got to sing in his full uniform. Like, High School Musical 4, dude. Like, that energy of just being out there, wearing pants, holding the mic, singing, having the, what's the thing, like the earpiece in on your back? No notes. Great stuff.
Oh, yeah. I mean, he was ready. I don't know if they had rehearsed this, like, before in the afternoon, but like they were ready to do this, and it was absolutely amazing. And that one loss was the only Astros loss in their last 10 games, so worthy of celebration, worthy of oh my god. Let us move. We have two segments remaining, and then we will wrap with the Home Run Derby news. Jake, it's time for the player of the weekend. One player, one performance who stood out. Listen, we've already mentioned a few, but this one really, 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 really got me. And that was Giants right-hander Spencer Bivens. Who in the world is Spencer Bivens? Spencer Bivens, an undrafted Division II journeyman who has made his Major League debut with the Giants after a few years in their system. He just turned 30 years old this weekend, I believe. And Spencer Bivens got the start after a ridiculous bullpen game on Saturday where both teams used 5 billion pitchers. They were like, who's going to start this game? All right, Spencer Bivens, go for it. Dude, you've been pretty good for us out of the bullpen, and you can throw, you know, multiple innings. And so Spencer Bivens goes 5 innings, allows 1 run against the Dodgers, strikes out 3 in his first career start. He had been only relieving, really, mostly in pro ball. So this is just a complete departure from what he had been doing. He strikes out Shohei Ohtani twice, and Bill Plunkett, the Dodgers beat writer, tweets, Spencer Bivens just won the World Series, or appeared to based on his celebration reaction after striking out Shohei Ohtani for the second time today. Bill Plunkett, I like you a lot. I think you're very good at your job, and I enjoy talking to you at the ballpark. However, this was a wonderfully, perfectly grumpy tweet that everyone properly dunked on. The Dodgers world being like, oh, you think you're so great, this is your World Series, striking us out. Well, Spencer Bivens, who had quite a journey to this first pro start, deserved every ounce of excitement that he gave as the Giants take this series from the Dodgers. It was one of the coolest things I've seen. And I don't know if he's ever going to start another game in the big leagues, although maybe this earned him the opportunity to, but he will always have that. And he should have been even more excited. He should have been, he would have had full reign to do whatever he wanted after that second strikeout on an absolutely nasty pitch.
It is his World Series. And that's not necessarily a bad thing. Like, if you're a mediocre team, you're good.
Spencer Bivens, probably not pitching in the World Series this year. You know? Like, that's not really likely on the table for him. And so this, when you consider where he was a year, let alone 5 years ago, this is every bit that. And so I'm glad he celebrated it.
You know who else isn't pitching in the World Series this year? Bill Plunkett and Shohei Ohtani.
Fair enough. All right, Jake, we have five more series. Every Monday, we are throwing five series into full-blown turbo mode. Jake, you are going to do this five series in under 5 minutes. Take it away. I will sprinkle in if I must, but go right ahead. You are on the
I'm going to do it under call. 2 minutes because I'm just flat out built different. Padres take 2 out of 3 over the Red Sox in Boston, winning the first two. Boston takes game three in the rain. The enduring moment here is Xander Bogaerts on the top step in the dugout at Fenway, longingly gazing across the field at his old friends. He will not be back at Fenway Park until 2026. And my proposal here is, can we just like void the Padres contract and put him back on the Red Sox? It just feels right. His Padres tenure has been a little bit choppy. You know, the ownership situation there is different. Like, can we just get, everyone should get a mulligan. Red Sox should just give him the money he wants and everyone will be happy. They need a shortstop. Like, as baseball god, I deem that just and a must. Manny Machado is heating up for the Padres, which is a very good sign for them as they keep inching forward above the muck of mediocrity towards legitimate contention. Staying in the NL West, the Arizona Diamondbacks took 2 out of 3 over the Oakland A's at home. Boy, oh boy, was this a series I watched none of. All you need to know, in my opinion, Zach Gallen, who missed some time with injury, he is back and he has been much better. He was good in his start over the weekend. The Tampa Bay Rays took 2 out of 3 from the Washington Nationals at home. Randy Arozarena, who for the first 2 months was absolutely awful, just horrible, he's starting to look more like Randy Arozarena, which raises the question, should the Rays trade him? Should they go for it? One thing the Tampa Bay Rays will never do is go for it. So I think he could definitely get traded. The Nats, meanwhile, lots to look forward to today on Monday, July 1st. James Wood, their top prospect, getting the call, one of the top prospects in baseball from the DC area. He's 6'7". He is just a lanky boy, and I am very excited to watch him mash baseballs in the major leagues. I have some reporting on James Wood about his background that I did and then never got around to writing a story on. And you'll eventually see that one day on Yahoo.com. Okay, two more series. The White Sox take 2 out of 3 from the Rockies at home. Almost getting the sweep in the last game, but not quite. That one, I think, went 14 innings. Kind of a freaky game there. The Rockies DFA Elaharis Montero, who was the main piece they got in the Nolan Arenado trade, yet again admitting defeat. When you trade someone like Nolan Arenado, who is a franchise staple, a franchise icon, you just got to get that right. You really do. And it was pretty obvious to everybody that the Rockies didn't do it at the time. And time has only proved them more wrong. The White Sox, whenever they win, I just feel happy for the people who are around that team. Because when you're a bad ball club, winning is still better than losing. And lastly, the Minnesota Twins took 2 out of 3 from the Mariners in Seattle. The Mariners' offense is really embarrassing. They should just keep firing people on the offensive side, getting rid of their, you know, offensive coordinator or whatever doesn't seem to have worked. And correct me if I'm wrong, Jordan, there was like a Julio standing ovation situation where they planned to cheer him at some point.
I haven't done this rant on the podcast. I've done this off the air, but I am just very firmly anti-standing ovation, desperation. The Trey Turner thing was cool. You can't just, like, you should not feel the need to be to show extra. Like, you should be cheering for Julio anyway, because he signed a freaking lifetime contract with you, and he's incredibly talented. Of course, he's been disappointed. You shouldn't have to be like, oh, now we should show him that we support him. Okay, really? Well, that shouldn't be. And guess what? He is in a horrible slump. They do have the lowest batting average in baseball. The Seattle Mariners do, and yeah, it feels like it. They don't get a lot of hits, so they snuck out one with some real goofiness on Saturday. But other than that, not hitting it right now.
The Trey Turner situation, you're very correct, was its own thing. It was like the most angry historically angry fan base with a player in the first year of an enormous contract who was clearly in his own head about that. And it worked. It doesn't mean that if you cheer for Julio, it's going to just like spark him up. I understand the sentiment.
It's not a solution, right? it's fine. I'm not saying, again,
it's not a strategy.
How to be fans, but it's not a strategy. It's not like, because it's also so self-important. I think that's what bothers me. It's like, oh, we have to do something, right? It's like, no, he's doing his best. He is putting the work in. I'm not worried that Julio is like, ugh, if only they give me some support. I mean, listen, I'm sure you appreciate it. Maybe this is a grumpy take. For some reason, it irks me, because I feel like it's like, no, it's not about the fans. These players, baseball's really hard. Hitting is so hard. Think about how many of these great hitters have been awful to start the season. Like, it's happening all over the place. These slumps will happen. We saw it last year with Julio, who had a 700 OPS at the All-Star break, and then he had the best August we've ever seen. So it's okay. He's doing what he needs to do.
Fans want to believe that. We want to believe that we have control over things, 100%. Right?
That's what it
like
is.
Like, when I was a kid and was a diehard Wizards fan in like 2005, I would, you know, sit on different sides of my bed while they were getting beat by the Cavaliers in the playoffs. And I was like, oh, I'm making a difference. Like, we're not. I mean, at the same time, the fan experience is the whole point of this, right? It is getting people to care about the thing. And if the way that people are exhibiting caring about the thing is by giving Julio a standing ovation, then like, that's great. I just think that maybe this is grumpy. I just think that if every team starts doing it for every single struggling superstar, then it just kind of gets a little bit corny.
Yeah, which is fine. I don't know. I'm curious if people disagree with me on that. So you can email us and let us know. But that's I have felt that way for a while, because I've seen it a few different places. And I'm like, not for me. But that's fine. That's fine. Everyone else can do their thing. But I do know that hitting .218 as a team, even in the year 2024, is not good enough. That was the baseball this weekend. Jake, we also had one bit of news that we did want to hit before we say goodbye, and that is that the Home Run Derby is indeed changing. Really, all you need to know is that now there is no bracket in the first round, so the top eight will advance. Some people, I'm fine with this. Essentially, before you had the matchups,
top four.
You like this? Do you like this as an improvement, or do you think that this is bad?
It's better. I think the matchups are cool. But it is silly when a guy hits 25 home runs and loses to someone because they hit 26, whereas someone else gets through beaten. They hit 12 and their opponent hit 11. So this is good. As someone who cares way too much about the Home Run Derby as a thing, I think these rule changes are positive. The biggest issues with the previous format, as you noted, was like the head-to-head wonkiness. And then it sometimes felt too frantic, where it was how many swings can we get off within a period of time? And the camera like didn't even have time to follow the ball. Adding in the new restriction about total pitches in a round is going to help to make the pace a little bit slower and easier to follow.
I'm curious about that part.
These are not as drastic as I thought they would be.
Yeah, I'm curious about that part, just because like, obviously there's a reason they chose 40 pitches in 3 minutes, that they probably decided that was would help the pace. But it's possible, if some people think that they have more time, that they only end up, you know, getting 34 pitches or 36 pitches. So there's probably still going to be some strategy and some rush. But it'd be really funny. I think what would be really interesting is if one pitcher is still used to just going as fast as possible, or you know, trained as fast as possible, that they finish their 40 pitches in like 2 minutes and 15 seconds. And they're like, oh, now we look like idiots because we're exhausted. So there will be some more strategy in this, but I agree, it's generally not going to change it too much. I'm just excited Gunnar's doing the Derby. And also, now that we have Gunnar doing the Derby, like, we'll start getting some more names. I wouldn't be surprised if we start hearing some more names in the next couple days that we could talk about on Wednesday and Friday leading up to All-Star. Jake, there are only three baseball games today. This is the lightest slate of any regular season day in the entire season. That is not, of course, during the All-Star break. So I don't know if you people have other plans tonight, but if you want to watch Major League Baseball, you are stuck with just three games, the beginning of four-game sets between the Astros and Blue Jays, the Mets and Nationals, and Brewers and Rockies. Those are your options this evening. Hunter Brown on the bump tonight, Mackenzie Gore as well, two pitchers I do enjoy watching. But it is a little bit of a weird schedule this week because of July 4th, but obviously it'll be nice to have a full Thursday slate. But yeah, that's what we have ahead of us. Otherwise, I think this was a solid. If you liked some of these segments, if you didn't like them, let us know. BaseballBarbiecast@gmail.com. This has been our Monday edition of Baseball Barbiecast. Thank you to producer Hillary Georgie for producing this episode while Andrew Hartz has other responsibilities. It's okay. Andrew will be back soon. Hillary will also be back soon. Thank you to Hillary. You can email us. Thank you, Jake. And we will be back on Wednesday. Thanks for listening to Baseball Barbiecast.